It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, your host, along with Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and a financial advisor, and Peg Webb, senior vice president and financial advisor. An interesting topic this week, guys. Should you tell your adult children how much money you have? I asked my mom one time this, both of you, and she said, none of your business. So go
good
ahead.
Morning,
good morning, Peg. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Bruce.
Yeah.
Good morning, Peg Webb. Good morning, Susie Jones. And yeah, Susie, that's not uncommon, Peg, right? I mean, in my experience, I would say the vast majority of people do not talk about personal finance, not only not with their children, but sometimes even spouses have secrets from one another financially. And we seem to live in a culture, at least where I live in the upper Midwest here in Minnesota, where it's just perceived as bad form or inappropriate to talk about money. That's just one of the things you're not supposed to talk about. And today we're going to talk a little bit about whether or not you should communicate and how much and maybe the right way to go about it. This is not anything, Peg, that's an exact science, but I'm firmly in the camp that, you know, you from a planning perspective, not only for our clients, but for the next generation, there has to be some communication, right?
There absolutely has to be. And you're spot on, Bruce, in the fact that where you're located, you know, or like where I grew up also in the Midwest, I find that those people are a little bit more conservative. But now that Wealth Enhancement Group has offices all the way from Los Angeles to New York City, you know, and a lot of those people are on the round table, those advisors, I'm finding out that we're not the same, right, as everybody across America when it comes to letting their children know what wealth they have. But you and I have done this so many times on the show where we talk about children, and we talked about our children, and it's kind of the start of money and understanding what money can do for you. And so research shows that, you know, starting at maybe 7 years old through 13, you know, educate your children on the basics of saving and getting interest and maybe go open a bank account, that kind of thing. I've been a big proponent of the school systems trying to teach children as well, because a lot of times they don't get that knowledge from home. So the combination of the parents and the school system is a good start. And then, you know, that's early on, right? But then there is a study that says that 60% of wealth transfer is failures from a stem of poor communication. I didn't know what my parents had. I'm definitely reserved. My daughter doesn't know. She kind of knows, but she doesn't know exactly what I have. And so that communication, and I hate to use the word lack of trust, because I think people trust their children. It's just that money is just something that's just so ingrained in you. And a lot of times, Bruce, your makeup or your thoughts about money come from your parents, and then they kind of carry on that same feeling of sharing, Bruce.
Yeah, that's all good stuff. And there's several different directions I can go based on what you just said, Peg. I actually was I was going to ask you, and I didn't want to put you in an uncomfortable or unfair position, but I was going to ask how much you share, because, you know, we've had the conversation of how we advise clients, but I've never asked you directly what you've communicated. And you and I are both blessed in that our children are doing well, right? I know Nicole, and I know, you know, she's self-sufficient and she doesn't need anything from you and Mike. And my kids are the same way. And I'm like you, Peg. My kids know that they're going to get some inheritance, and they know that I've been blessed and have done pretty well, but they don't know a specific number. And it's not a secret. I just don't know that it matters. And one of the things, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself in terms of the things we're going to talk about today, but I think some people think it's inappropriate to share because they don't want to disincentivize or spoil the child. They're afraid to say, look, if they know they're going to get this money, I'm afraid they'll be a bum and they won't work and they'll sleep till noon and play video games all day and they won't get a job. But I've always come from the standpoint that if you parent well, if you raise good, responsible children with a good work ethic that want to be self-sufficient, that want to contribute to society, that want to help others, whether they get a chunk of money or not, it's not going to change them. It's not going to spoil them or ruin them or disincentivize them. And with my kids, I think I was right. But again, everybody feels differently about that, Peg.
Yeah, and I would say everybody is different. I agree with you, Bruce, there. And it's just that money is just such a sensitive issue. And parents know their kids. You know, so just trying to start with some basis for a start of, and you can kind of witness, I think, how your kid's going to be even when they're small. You know, do they tend to want 10 pieces of candy versus one? I mean, it's just, you kind of start teaching that ingrain that in them. So when you talk about this, you know, these ages, I think it is good, and I've already mentioned the school system, but, you know, spending, saving, and giving. I mean, that basic knowledge of kids is fantastic. And some people out there, they're religious, and they still go to church on Sundays. And I found that was a great way for myself. You know, as a family, we went, and then we put money in the basket, and then I had to understand why we did that. I always suggest that people open some type of bank account. Now, you and I probably walked in the bank, right, and we opened our bank account. Today, it might be a little bit more difficult to have it be tangible, but online, you know, you could walk through, and I'm talking about even 3-year-olds or 5-year-olds. I have a 3.5-year-old granddaughter, and it's amazing to me what they know and how they understand. But they all have these little iPads that they have now, and they teach themselves. And so there's things like that that you have to just kind of start slow. The other one that's tougher, and this is, I'm going to get back to you and I, Bruce, as an advisor. Definitely people are more reserved, and they don't really understand why they would have to share. Now, there's been families that are, the kids are more aggressive about wanting to know, and not that they really want the money, but they want to help and make sure that they're making the right decisions. Now, a lot of that can come from, what is your family values? Like, do you have the same values? What about, you know, inheriting that money? Are you willing to share it? So we have discussions with the clients about that because they're all so unique. And I would say, Bruce, that a high percentage do not share with their children, even if they're 40 and 50 years old.
Oh, and I agree with that. And the other thing I just thought of, Peg, I've seen multiple times over the years where the kids want to know, and I trust that the kids' motivation is not selfishness or greediness or, you know, how much am I going to inherit, but they want to help mom and dad as they age. They don't want them to make any bad decisions or be taken advantage of by anybody. So they ask because they want to help. And I've seen situations where mom and dad don't want to share because they don't trust the motivation of their own child. They're afraid that the child is just worried about their inheritance. And I look at it from an objective perspective, and I'm like, I really don't think that's what's going on here. But mom and dad don't trust that the kids have their best interest at heart. Have you seen that?
I have. And you know what a trend is today? And this is with my clients and several advisors at our company, and I'm sure outside of us they're doing this too. But clients are truly want home ownership for their children. Like, you know how all the kids, they're not kids anymore, they might be in their 30s, they haven't purchased a home. And we kind of have this idea that buying a home and investing in a home is a great idea. Well, the younger kids today aren't all in agreement with that. So So one way that they're kind of luring them into buying a home is they either give them the full down payment and have some terms on it and help them get in a home, or they're literally buying these houses outright for these kids. I mean, I've had several clients come, and I'm okay with it if that's what you want to do, because you've made so much money in the last 5 years. If you want to purchase a home and have them, you know, start on a really solid foundation, I'm okay with it. I think it's a great idea, Bruce.
A couple of thoughts, and I know we're kind of all over the map here. I think it's a good discussion, but it's been sort of freewheeling all over the place. And I promise, listeners, before we're done, excuse me, I'll give it a little more context. But early on, Peg, you were talking about when to start and teaching kids about money. I've talked on this show many times that we gave our kids an allowance, and it wasn't a paycheck, it wasn't a reward. It was really a methodology of teaching about money, and we talked about splitting it into thirds. You spend a third, you save a third, you use a third to help others less fortunate, and so on. So I really think, again, for us, now that my children are grown, those lessons worked well. You also talked about how kids are different. I have two children. My son was always very pragmatic and still is about money and is, I don't want to say frugal, but is conscientious. My daughter is much more liberal in how she's willing to spend money. But again, as adults, they both are launched. They're both doing great. They don't ask for help, but I gift to my children every year. And I may have talked about this on the show before also. If they were hitting me up for money all the time, I wouldn't want to help them, but they don't. They don't ask for anything. They want to be independent. They want to make their own way. And when I want a gift, they actually would push back a little bit and say, "Dad, you don't have to do this." And I would say, "Look, this makes my heart happy to help my children. You're going to inherit when I leave this world. We all know that. But I'm not going to be here to enjoy it. Let me help you now." I mean, even if you're doing well, it's hard to find kids in their late 20s or early 30s that couldn't use a little extra money for some reason. So I do gift to my kids, and they're appreciative of it. And I know not everybody listening has the economic wherewithal to do that. Or even if you did, you would choose not to do that because you would want your kids to make their own way. So how much you help, when you help, how much you communicate, we've kind of been all over the map, but there's reasons to share. Probably the biggest is, you know, education and preparedness for when you leave this world. Kids who understand money are better positioned to handle it later when they inherit it, if you talk about it. But we've also talked about some of the risks or hesitancies. We talked about privacy. We talked about kids maybe not being ready. We talked about, you know, maybe influencing them negatively or disincentivizing them. But Peg, you started to go down a road with technology and security. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think this is a big one. I think because the younger generation seem to be more savvy, not everybody, but generally more savvy about technology. And we talk often on this show about how do you keep safe? How do you not get your information out to what I would call the bad people? And I see the generations maybe coming together on technology, because there's ways that you can secure your information. I mean, the days of us having a bank account where we literally have to go in the bank and get money is so far gone. We have to know technology. And I know for the older generations, and I'll include myself, you know, if I didn't have my husband's help, I probably would be a little bit lost about, like, how do you secure all your information and keep up with the technology? Because some of the things are so old. And then now we've got this AI coming out, and there's tools out there, and I think positively about that, that you could use as far as maybe getting the families together and understanding things. And I would say people shouldn't be hesitant on asking for help, because we're going through this technology so fast. And I believe the younger generations would be more than happy to help. And then there's so many more disclosures on opening accounts and that kind of thing, and even educating your parents, where I think they would feel fortunate in having that. And then on the backside, maybe the trust starts to come that you want to share more things with your children because of technology and how they're so much more knowledgeable. And then that would be almost like a partnership, if you will, a family partnership, and doing it together.
So we've talked about some reasons why you probably should share some information. And we've talked about some reasons where you understand that you might be reluctant to share some information. And again, I think this is a very personal decision, but let's talk a little bit about, let's say that we've convinced you that you should share something. Maybe you don't want to share everything. Maybe you do, but you can. But I think that to just live in a vacuum and not share anything, I think that's a mistake. So let's assume that everybody listening agrees that they should share something, and it's up to them whether it's everything or it's part of the story. But how do they go about doing that? What's a good way to share with adult children or family members or people that you want to know more about your situation? Peg, logistically, how do they go about it?
Well, I think if there's more than one child, it does get a little bit complex. But, you know, you tend to talk about it at holidays, because you're all together. And that may not be the appropriate time to do it, but I think you could drop like a little bit of seed conversation. And then openly, it probably would be best if the family got together. Like, instead of you come over to your parents' house and maybe you're trying to help them do something and then the topic comes up. Well, if it does come up, then maybe you request, maybe we should have a formalized meeting and talk about things. And it doesn't mean you have to tell everything. You just kind of have a basis for a start. And Bruce, the only other thing I wanted to mention quickly was, I feel like if the clients are charitably inclined, a good way to kind of get their kids in on that is to also share different charities that they love. And maybe we can talk about that on the backside.
Yeah, we still got a few minutes left before we need to take a break. And yeah, definitely on the backside, I also want listeners to share their experiences, their philosophy, whether they share or don't share and why they feel that way or how much they've shared, or examples of if sharing has led to positive results for their kids. But Peg, I like what you said about if it happens organically, like just at holiday, you know, get-togethers or whatever. But you also mentioned structured family meetings, and I do definitely have clients that have meetings to talk about these things as a family, where they all get together at once, almost like a business meeting or a board meeting. And I kind of like that approach, and I have to admit, I haven't really done that. Well, I would say I've done it once. We're both my kids and their significant others, and I got together and I went over some things. But even that meeting for me was more, you know, my role as a dad, not as a financial advisor. And that segues to the next thing. I've also had a lot of clients that when they decide to do this communication, they use me. They bring the kids into the review meeting, and so that I can communicate to them, here's what mom and dad have, here are their goals and objectives, here's your expectations, here's what, you know, what they're hoping to do for you, and they have me be the facilitator and explain what they're trying to accomplish and unveil their financial situation. And I think that's a good way to do it. So this idea of treating it almost more business-like with a family meeting or having your advisor communicate, I think are both good ideas, but also I like what you said about just organically, it just happens maybe at a holiday gathering, Peg.
Yes, and also I believe that if you you don't necessarily have to bring the family members in. My first job is always first the clients have to be willing, you know, to give money, and I still feel like it's a generational thing where they believe that they should keep it all and not kind of help their children, even sometimes when they're in grand need, and because they feel like it'll derail that person. So it's a real sensitive subject, But having somebody like your financial advisor talk to you about it and make suggestions is a huge add-on for people that work with us.
Before we go to break, Susie, a couple key points I'll make. Again, listeners, we want you involved in the second half. But I think that, you know, some of the keys are is that sharing personal financial information with your kids can be valuable if you handle it correctly. Timing and depth of how much you share is going to vary from person to person, and it's kind of up to you where your comfort level lies. But I think the key is, Peg and Susie, it's not about how much you have or don't have. It's more about what the money means to the next generation and your core values and what's important to you. I've often said, as someone that grew up poor and not having money, money doesn't buy happiness, but having money is better than not having money. And if you love your kids and you want to help them launch and get off to a good start, to help them financially, it can be very, very gratifying, and you have to communicate ultimately. So we'll finish this discussion, talk about philanthropy in the second half of the show, and get listeners involved, Susie.
All right, 651-461-9226. That's the number to call. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, any topic, really, I'm sure they'll get to whatever you need, whatever's on your mind, 651-461-9226. We're back right after this short break. And we're back for the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb, taking your calls at 651-461-9226, talking about should you tell your adult children how much money you have. That's the topic. And as we recap, Bruce, remember, we've got folks on the line. We've got Mac and Al and a number of questions online as well. So if you want to just take it from there, and we'll see how many questions we can get answered.
Susie, let's, you know what, we can, Peg and I can still chat about a couple more other things later in the show if we want to, but if, I don't want to make people hold on the line any longer than we have to. Let's get to the calls.
All right, let's take, Al is calling from Plymouth with a question for Bruce and Peg. Go ahead, Al, you're on the air.
Hi, Bruce and Peg, great show. I've been a customer of yours for 20 years, and I work with the Newhouse Group out of Arden Hills. Wonderful. They're like family. And as you were talking, last week you had a show on taxes, and this week you're talking about the family knowing about your finances. I've contacted Michelle, and she in turn has sent a quarterly report on my finances to my son and daughter, just as religiously as she does to me. And we also meet with her at least once a year with my son and daughter, so they're involved in everything. My question that I have for Bruce and Peg is what on gifting to our children, how much are we able to gift? I give $15,000 to my son and daughter, and also my three grandchildren. Am I able to do anything on my taxes with that? Thanks. Great show.
Hey, Al. Thanks for the listening. Thanks for calling in with a great question, and thanks for being a committed client. We appreciate you for 20 years, and I love what Al said about the relationship. Is almost like family. I love that, and it's not the first time we've heard that. So congratulations to Michelle Newhouse and her team for cultivating such a great relationship with Al. Peg, talk a little bit about gifting. How much can you gift, and how does it work from a tax standpoint?
Yeah, so the $15,000 that you mentioned, yes, that was a dollar amount a couple years ago. But what they've done is they've added some inflation, meaning you can gift more today. It's now up to $19,000 per person. And there's no cap to that, meaning how much you can give. You could give $19,000 to 100 people if you wanted to. But you've got your son and your daughter and the three grandchildren. A couple things you could do. A lot of clients give cash outright because they believe that they need that cash now. What some clients do is they'll take a stock, like a stock that they've already purchased a long time ago, and it has a really low basis, meaning you might have paid a dollar for that stock, and now it's worth $10. And you can transfer stock to your children and your grandchildren if you want, if it's not something that they immediately need. And that way you're getting that off of your total net worth upon your death. There isn't any other real tax deduction for giving your money away other than death taxes. So another reason that people give the money away is because if you have a lot of money, and we talked about this last week, where you can die with $15 million federally, that if you're over that, it might be a good idea to gift even more and get that off your ledger. A lot of times people feel like, how can I stop this growth? Because if you keep all that money, it just keeps compounding and rolling down a mountain like a snowball. So that's another reason that our clients give more than they, and then if you want to give more, just one more thing, if you want to give more than $19,000, all you simply have to do is fill out a form with the IRS notifying them that you have given more than you need to. And Kate Meyer talked about that last week, in that it's easy to fill out that form if you want to give more upfront. Bruce?
Yeah, Peg, that was a great answer. I love that you went into strategic planning in terms of appreciated assets and maybe more effective ways to do the giving. It sounded like Al, part of his question, he's wondering if there can be any tax benefit for him for his giving. And the answer is, if it's giving to, you know, to family or loved ones, you don't get to deduct that giving. Obviously, charitable giving to a church or a charity, you may be able to deduct. But Peg, as we've talked about so often on this show, the standard deduction now for most people is so high that they don't have enough itemized deductions, or they don't do enough charitable giving to deduct that on their taxes. And again, there's strategies there where we might be able to help you get some tax benefit for your generosity. And I also just wanted to add clarity really quickly to that $19,000, because sometimes when I tell people this, Peg, they're very surprised. It's $19,000 per year per person with no tax consequence, nothing you have to sign or fill out, not income that they have to report. Like you said, Peg, you can give a lot more than that, but then it's going to complicate things a little bit. But $19,000 per year per person means if my spouse and I each want to give our adult child $19,000, we can. That's $38,000. And if we want to gift $19,000 to our spouse's a partner, wife or husband, we can do that also. So it ends up being $76,000 to one family that we can gift on an annualized basis without any tax consequences. Now, I realize most of our listeners don't have the economic wherewithal to be that generous, but that's how big the number could be if your circumstances, if you had that much money. Susie?
651-461-9226. Let's take Mac. He's calling today from Cottage Grove. You're on the air with Bruce and Peg.
Yeah, good morning. I've listened to your show for many, many years on Sundays as I'm going to church. So I'm sitting in the parking lot now, and I have a question. I have a granddaughter who's 16 who just started working at Target, and I asked her, how much money are you going to save? And she, of course, she just wants to spend and go. So I'm wondering, how soon can someone open up a Roth IRA?
Hey, Mac, thanks for listening, and that's a great question. Peg, let's get Mac a good answer here so he can get into church.
Yeah, well, anybody can open up. I don't think there's an age. I don't have a lot of Roth with young children. But I'm sure the first thing I would do is, if she works for Target, she should inquire about their company plans that she might be able to contribute to, and then get a match of some sort. So that's like free money. And also, Target has both a deductible IRA with them or a Roth IRA. So a lot of these young people are they don't want a tax deduction. They want to go into a Roth IRA within their employer. And once again, if Target matches, that's like free money. So she needs to be educated on that. Then if she maxes that out, I kind of doubt it. Then you would go to the next level, and then you would take money after taxing, just go open your own IRA Roth. Versus, I don't think there's an age on opening up a Roth.
No, there isn't. That just the criteria is that there has to be earned income. So I've said before, you know, if you have a baby that gets a commercial because they're such a cute baby and they pay you to have your baby in a commercial, that baby can have a Roth IRA. You just have to have earned income, and you can't put in more than what you earn. So even though the amount of money that you can put into an IRA, I think, what is it now, Peg, if you're under 50, $6,500 or where I lose track of where the dollar amount even is.
Yeah, I think I don't have that in front of me right now either.
So let's say it's $6,500, but you earned $5,000. You can't put $6,500 in if you only earned $5,000, but you could put in $5,000. And Mac, if Grandpa, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't do this, but if Grandpa wants to open a Roth and contribute for 16-year-old granddaughter because she's making money on her part-time job, you can fund a Roth on her behalf, as long as she has earned income and she can prove that. Earned income could be babysitting money if you keep track of it, how much you earned, and you can verify it. So age doesn't matter. Earned income is the key there, Mac and listeners.
All right,
$7,000 you can put in.
Okay. 651-461-9226. Here's a good question. My wife and I are in our mid-60s. An attorney who's drafted wills, he says, he thinks it's important for our adult children to understand our financial position and how to handle financial assets and estate matters after we pass. My wife does not think we should share information with our sons. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of manage that? And I bet you do. I mean, as you work with couples, have one person or the other with a disagreement on how to share or not share.
That's such a good question, Peg. It frequently, not just on this topic, but on a lot of topic, partners, husband, wife, couples, they don't always agree on everything. And sometimes our job, even though we're not trained psychologists or trained marriage counselors, sometimes our job is to help find the compromise that they both can accept and agree to and live with and put some peace and harmony back into the relationship because of a financial disagreement. How would you tackle that one, Peg?
Well, in all the years I've been doing this job, I see that a lot of times it's their past. So let's say you have a husband and a wife. Each of them grew up in a certain environment. And and a lot of times it's still really strong and they're opinionated about, you know, giving money, or maybe one side feels like, hey, we're in our 60s. But these people are living to 100. So that's a long period of time. And the real question is, do you need it, or would you rather see, you know, your children take some of that money now? And I think there's a happy medium. I mean, I kind of coach clients to if they want to give, you know, then give. If you feel, you know, ask your financial advisor or somebody if you can afford to give, because I see the opposite where clients are giving too much and then longevity is still there in their family. So I feel for you, and I'm sure there's a lot of decisions between a husband and a wife that you have to come together and make that decision. Hopefully it's not, no, we're not doing that. You know, having a little compromise would be the best.
You know what, you guys, you can't even, it's amazing to me how often on this show, the question we get, I can directly relate to, because it just happened. This happened to me literally on Thursday. I'm sitting with longtime clients, really good people. And in the review, they've done really, really well, and they have more money than they ever thought they would have. They retired 20 years ago, and they have more money now than they did when they retired. They were worried about shrinkage when they retired, and their net worth has actually grown, and even though they're living the way they want at retirement. So she says, I would like to give more to the kids and the grandkids at the meeting. And he looks at her like she lost her mind, and he's like, why would we do that? Well, I would like to. I would just like to do that. He's like, we don't need to do that. And they literally started to bat it back and forth in front of me. And I said, okay, look, you guys have to go home and figure this one out on your own. But as your advisor, I can tell you, you can afford to do that. Whether or not you want to or not, you guys have to come to that decision on your own. And let's not have this discussion right now. But if you have any questions discussing it at home and you want to call me back or bring me into the conversation, I'll add my 2 cents. So Peg and Susie, this question the texter asked literally happened to me on Thursday.
All right. 651-461-9226. Another question about the amount that a person can give. Bruce and Peg and Susie, well, mostly you two, love your show. Ooh. Bruce mentioned gifting. What is the 2025-26 federal gift limit and above which tax reporting is required? You mentioned it, but maybe we recap that because that's a very common question.
So, Peg, you want to go a little more deeper on that? So it's $19,000 per year per person, but then we get into, you know, how much you can gift during a lifetime and how much you can exclude when you leave this world. How deep do you want to go, Peg?
Well, the $19,000, let's just make sure it's husband and wife. So you can each gift anywhere between zero and $19,000 and not have to fill out a form. And this form is not a big deal, everybody. So if you want to give more, you can. And another thing is with younger children, 529s, you can give forward 5 years of gifting into a 529. So that's just a side note. But one of the things that people do is you have to get together and just decide what's the next step you want to give. So 19,000, I don't have a ton of people that are giving a lot of money away because of what I just said. People are living longer. We're getting more modern medicine, and who knows? Bruce, you and I might live to 120. We don't know yet, and so it's hard to create a number that's going to be okay, to save for the rest of your life. Bruce?
Yeah, that was a great answer. I don't have anything to add to that. That was awesome.
But that is interesting point, though, to both you and Peg and Bruce and Peg about how long you live. So my mom had a financial advisor that said she could live till she's 94, then she would run out of money. Well, guess what? She's going to be 95 in March. So how do you kind of maneuver that with a client if they, in fact, live past the time you have allowed them to live based on their whatever, you know what I'm trying to say? Because I wonder if that happens.
Yeah, that's such a great question. And oftentimes I will, it's a very serious subject and I'll try to add some levity to it and I'll be kind of facetious. I'll be at a public speaking engagement and I'll say, we want to make sure you don't run out of money before you run out of breath. But, financial planning is really easy if we know exactly when you're going to die, but we never know that. I had somebody in a seminar once say, I want to spend my last dollar the day I take my last breath. I said, we can do that. We're good enough that we can do that. You just have to tell us when you're going to die. And you don't know the answer to that question, obviously. So we always assume that you're going to live longer than you probably will or than statistically you will. We run these forecasts out. Typically, Peg, what do you go past age 100, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I just had I just remembered that this happens often, where gifts are given to the children, but then there's kind of like a little I might need that in long term. So what the kids do is they invest it. It is under their name, and maybe they take some dividends off of it. But the growth on it could and may have to be used for the mom and dad if they live to 110. You know what I mean? So they're not taking the gift, spending it, but there's a thought that maybe they then help their parents because they lived so long.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, Susie, just to put a fine point on this, we do the financial planning that we do for clients, and different advisors give it different names, but it's financial projections, financial forecasting, cash flow analysis, whatever. We make assumptions. We don't know how long you're going to live, so we usually assume an age past what the statistics say you will live to. So in your case, your question, they said your mom will live to 94. Now she's going past it. We would have probably assumed at least 100 or longer, you know, in terms of how long the money will last, and coach the spending so it lasts that long. But there's other things we don't know the answer to either, and we have to make assumptions. So we have to make an assumption on cost of living adjustment or inflation rate. And we have to make an assumption on aggregate return on investment on all of your money. And we have to make an assumption on how much you're going to spend every year. But when we make those assumptions, we tend to err on the side of caution, meaning we probably overstate what the inflation rate will actually be based on historical inflation rates. And we probably understate what we think the return on investment will actually be based on our historical perspective and what we've been able to achieve in the past. So the only thing we know for sure is where you're at right now. And on everything else, we have to make an educated guess. And we make an educated guess, but if we're going to miss on that guess, we miss on the side of caution, which is why even the couple I just brought up from last Thursday, they have $200,000 more than they had when they retired. Well, we didn't forecast. We forecasted that they wouldn't run out of money, but we didn't forecast $200,000 of growth because our assumptions were very conservative, and we were intentionally very conservative. Peg, anything to add to that? We're probably about out of time. We probably don't have time for another question. Last thoughts to you, Peg.
Well, I think that that's a really hard thing to do, but some people just kind of nixed financial planning because they're like, oh, this might happen or that might happen. But having a guide that you're following, to me, in the 4 decades I've done it, it's just given people confidence, not only to save, but to spend and live their life. And then we get back to the topic today about sharing that wealth with your children. And that's a personal situation, but we love talking to people out loud about it because then they try to get that clarity. And once again, not all of them agree. The couples don't agree. So having somebody like ourselves and your financial advisor can help you get through, that's a tough decision, Bruce.
Peg Webb, Susie Jones, you're both awesome. It's great to be with you. Listeners, thanks for being with us. And everybody, make it a great day.
It's going to be beautiful outside. If you did not get your question answered, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE and call and make an appointment for a free consultation. You can also email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Again, it is 1-888-6-ADVICE or yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Give them a call, set up a free consult, and they'll hopefully help guide you the right way. It is time to say goodbye. We'll see you again next week on Your Money.